If you could go back in time through the hallways of history, or if you had this present day, basically anything from where we stand today backwards, if you removed from the equation the creator and sustainer of the universe, so Jesus is out of the picture, all right? Who is it that you might most like to sit with and have a lunch or a cup of coffee and just ask 1,000 questions to? And if you can think about that for a second, just go back. It can be current history, it can be present day, long ago history, all the way back, as far as you can go. Who would you love to sit down with and just go, I got some questions? Think about that for a second. Any ideas? Anyone? Gandhi. Good.
Genghis Khan.
Winston Churchill. Genghis Khan. Ooh, that'd be interesting. You might not live through that one, but interesting. All right, just think about that for a second. It's an interesting question, isn't it? Who would you most like to learn from? I think all of us, to an extent, find ourselves seeking out the knowledge of others so that we can learn about the things that we are experiencing and living. We read books to do that. We listen to people through media now. We do meet with people. We call people we know and say, would you meet with me? Would you tell me what's going on? If we're in a certain stage of life, we look for people that may have walked through that stage of life already, and we ask them to come and sit with us and share with us some advice they may have. Sometimes we don't take the advice of people that have gone through the things we do because we think we know better. I mean, all that's a dynamic of what happens in this life. And I think part of the reason why that happens to us, part of the reason why we are so intent on wanting to learn, is because we find ourselves so limited in the life that we live in terms of what we know. Think about this. There's a song by Five for Fighting. I don't know if you've ever heard it. It's called 100 Years. It's one of my favorite songs, and they sing through this process where they just go, hey, you know, you are 15 for just a moment. Then you're 22 for just a moment. Then 33 for just a moment. Then 45 for just a moment. Then 63 for just a moment. And then 99 for just a moment. And then it's over. And through the song, he carries you through these different things that mark each of those particular eras in our life. And whenever I listen to the song, I think to myself, man, we got one shot at this life, you know? One shot, that's it. You have one shot at the years you've got right now. If you're in your teens, I mean, you got one shot at being a teenager. You never get to go back and do it again. You got one shot at your 20s, one shot at your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and when it's gone, it's gone. You do not get to go back and go, man, I wish I would have lived that way then. And so for us, our only real chance at getting things right before we've traveled through them is listening very, very carefully to some people that have learned some things traveling through the years we have yet to travel through and taking seriously what they tell us. Have you ever found yourself in those moments where you're standing in the middle of a moment in life and you recognize you know nothing about what you're about to do and a certain deep fear kind of infiltrates the soul and you just go, man, what am I doing? let me tell you, if you've never experienced that, brace yourself, all right? Because you will. I remember walking out of the hospital with my firstborn child. And that was one of the scariest moments of my life. Because I'll tell you, you walk out, she's sitting right there. She's now almost 11 years old, you know? And you look at her and you just thank God every day that he has allowed me to manage to get her here, you know? Because when I walked out of that hospital, you know, you're holding this baby and I mean, it's barely breathing. And you know, if you so much as turn it the wrong way, it'll break, you know? And they don't ask for credentials, resumes. They don't look at your driver's license. They don't even look at your driver's license. I mean, you could be anybody, anything. And you just walk out like, I know what I'm doing. They call you and they're like, listen, the nurse will check in 3 days, make sure you're fine. Like, 3 days? In 3 days, this child is dead. I am going to kill it because I don't know what I'm doing. And then by the time you have your fourth child like we have, you're dragging the child out of the hospital with the other three screaming and you're going, you're going to have to get used to this, kid. Trust me, you won't break. We tried with the other three. They don't break. You know? And so you look back, right? You look back at the things you've learned and the paths you've traveled and you go, wow, since I've traveled these paths, now I know better. I remember boiling the pacifier every time it fell on the ground for my first child. We had like 19 pacifiers so that we always had a fresh boiled pacifier. By the time Cole was born, my fourth, it falls on the ground. I didn't even lick it off. That was number three. Here. Number four, it's like, you'll be fine. Seriously. Why? Because you learn. You can't break the child, right? And so we travel. And there's other things. I mean, whether it's in business or whether it's in marriage or whether it's in relationships, whether it's in courting, wherever you find yourself, as you land in different stages of life, there is a certain amount of knowledge that you do not have that you have to gain in order to make it through that stage well. And the problem is, for many of us, it's not until we're through the stage that we get to look back and go, oh, man, I wish I had. I should have. I could have. I wonder. And that's not how we want to live, is it? And certainly, I don't think that's the way you want to live. It's not the way I want to live. I would rather get ahead of the game and know I'm walking into my 20s, 30s, 40s with a certain amount of knowledge to be able to navigate them well so that my life can reflect the wisdom that God is pouring in and making available to us every day. So there's that secret word, isn't it? Wisdom. Isn't that a funny word? Wisdom is an interesting thing. If we want to gain wisdom, we are going to need to dig into the lives and the stories of others that have walked ahead of us, and we're going to have to pay close attention. Do you know what wisdom is? Wisdom is an interesting thing. I went into dictionary.com to try to define wisdom, and actually, oh, look at that. I don't have my phone with me, so I can look at it again. But dictionary.com basically said that wisdom is the accumulation of knowledge and the ability to justly do right with that knowledge in action. That's basically what dictionary.com said. As simply put, wisdom is the application of knowledge to life in such a way that it leads to freedom, right? And so if you are able to gain the right kind of knowledge and then apply that knowledge to whichever particular season in life you land, you will be able to navigate that season in a manner that would lead to life. And that's what we want to do. So, you and I, we read books. We learn from people. We study the scriptures. We dig into those. But wouldn't it be magical, wonderful, amazing, if we could find someone, just someone, that could walk us through all of the major stages of life in one shot? Kind of go, here's the deal. I'm 99, and I'm going to write you a book, and I'm going to take you all the way back where you get to launch into that beautiful world of young love and wonder and just chasing after the wind and doing things that are awesome. And then I'm going to walk you into those stages in the midlife of parenting and mentoring and getting things right. And then I'm going to walk you into the older days and go, man, before you get to be old, make sure that you're getting these things right. Wouldn't it be cool if somebody could lay out for us the whole story front to back and say, here, read this and you'll be fine. It would be nice, wouldn't it? You know what's really funny? That story actually exists. That book that I just talked about, it actually exists. It exists right here inside of this book. Now, this book obviously is a massive and incredible collection of wisdom given to us by the creator and sustainer of the universe. But within this story, there is a life of a man who lived his life all the way through and happened to be marked by God himself as the wisest man that ever lived. And this wise man decided to put into writing a bunch of the stuff he learned, and he left it with us and said, here, I hope this helps. And God, in his infinite wisdom, decided to make this man's story and this man's writings part of the incredible story of God. Anybody take a guess at who this man is? No, oh, you guys, seriously, you've been in church too long. Solomon is the correct answer. Well done. Solomon, right? Solomon, very interesting character, fascinating man. Really, in many ways, brilliant beyond brilliant. It is no wonder that God told us, just so you know, no one can be this brilliant, I made him wise. All right, because God tells us that. Solomon was the son of David. David was the king of Israel. Solomon was not his oldest son. In fact, Solomon was born from Bathsheba, which, if you remember, was not a pretty story, okay? Definitely not the right story. Just goes to show how God uses our mess and still redeems stories, doesn't it? But Solomon is born from Bathsheba, and through an incredible set of circumstances, when David is about to die, David makes Solomon king, just as God had told David would happen through the prophets. Solomon becomes king in 971 BC, and he reigns as king for 40 years till 931 BC. Solomon becomes king at the age of 20, and he dies after 40 years at the age of 60 of being king. In Israel, when he becomes king, he is the last king to have the nation not divided, because after Solomon dies, his son Rehoboam takes over, and there is a divided kingdom, north and south. So Solomon is the last king we watch bring the kingdom into such unity and such power that at this time in world history, Israel, Jerusalem as a city, and Israel as a nation became the wealthiest, most powerful nation on the planet in the known world. Can you imagine? And all of that under the leadership of King Solomon. Now, Solomon, when he was just become king, in a dream, we are told, through his story in the book of Kings, that through a dream, God asked him, Solomon, I'm willing to give you whatever you want. What is it that you desire? And in his dream, in his sleep, Solomon said, I would like the wisdom that I need to discern how to run this country well, how to honor you in what I do. I find it fascinating that God did that in Solomon's sleep, because nobody wide awake would ever ask for something like that. So even God's grace is in Solomon's dreams, you know? And so Solomon asked for that, and God says, I am well pleased with that. Not only will I give you more wisdom than any man has ever had, but I will also give you wealth and riches. Which, when you study Solomon's writing, you find out, guess what leads to great wealth and riches on this planet? Really solid set of wisdom, right? So in some ways, you're like, God's going, well, so he gives Solomon wisdom, and we find this wisdom first showing itself in a situation you've probably heard about, where two women come and there's one baby. And the women argue about whose child it is. And they come to King Solomon and they say, we've tried all the other judges. Nobody can figure out. Can you please tell us? And that's that beautiful story where Solomon says, oh, you know what? I've got a better solution. Why argue about whose kid this is? Why don't we just share? That would be the wise thing to do. So somebody cut the kid in half, give her the bottom half, give her the top half. He does. And one of the women goes, that's a fantastic idea. About time somebody thought through this. And the other woman goes, you just give her the child, because there is no way I'm willing to watch my child die. And what does Solomon do? Well done. Give the child to the woman that just wanted him dead. No, he doesn't do that. He actually says, give the child to the other woman, right? And we get this glimpse into Solomon's life. Then Solomon travels through and he becomes a master builder. He builds the temple of God. He builds Solomon's temple, which to this day is famous for its incredible wonder. Those two structures put together was something in the known world of that time to be so extraordinary. People came from far and wide just to see God's temple and the temple of Solomon. He also built a temple for his wife, who was the daughter of Pharaoh that he had married, built her a temple, and then he built a number of other structures during his reign, which were incredible and fantastic. He built the wall around the city, which was another unbelievable feat, and this man became known in the known world as a master builder, which in that world, in that time, building was everything, right? Not only was he a master builder, but he was a master negotiator. He had more alliances during his time than you will ever see again in history. I mean, the guy was unbelievable at navigating alliances with the known world so he could pull and move and stretch things any way he wanted. In his reign, he knew so many people and had so many alliances that there wasn't anything Solomon couldn't get, anything Solomon couldn't do. Now, we watch this man, and it's easy to start watching him and go, man, this is the man to listen into. Oddly enough, he built Israel to become the great superpower that it was during that time. And then, in the last few years of his reign, he took that superpower, you ready for this? And he drove it straight into the ground. He destroyed everything that he had built. You know why he destroyed everything he built? Single most important reason, right? Because Solomon, in every one of those alliances that he made, he got something. You know what it was? A new wife every time. See, in that world, whenever you established an alliance with another king or another nation, they would give you a wife. Because family doesn't stab each other in the back. It was a great strategy. If my wife, my daughter, is your wife, then we're family. So you, basically, an alliance had nothing to do with a contract. That stuff can break apart easily. But as soon as you marry my daughter, well, now we've got some stake in the game, don't we? So what you would do in an alliance is you would exchange. The king of one nation would give his daughter or one of his daughters in marriage to the king of the other nation so that there was an alliance. We are told Solomon, when he was done with all of his alliances, had 700 wives. 700 wives! And 300 concubines. We'll discuss that later. 700 wives! Now, whenever you listen to Solomon telling, you know, and you're listening to Solomon's life and you hear that story, you go, oh my gosh, this guy was like wife crazy. He just went around marrying women. No, every one of those 700 women represented an alliance. Do you see why, in fact, in many ways, if you're looking at Solomon through the eyes of that world, when you hear Solomon has 700 wives, the first thing as a businessman that you do is, that guy's amazing! Because the first thing you're thinking is, who manages to become friends with 700 different kings? Because that's basically what that boils down to, right? So Solomon, in the mix of having all these 700 different wives, guess what happened? Guess what started happening to Solomon? These wives all came from a bunch of different nations, and those nations all worshipped a bunch of different gods. So Solomon started, and I can't speak for Solomon, but I can imagine with 700 wives, all of them complaining about the world they live in, at a certain point you just start giving in. You want another shrine? Fine, build her a shrine. Give her whatever god she wants. Have her worship whoever she wants. I'm over it. So he started allowing all of his wives to worship whatever gods they wanted to worship and do whatever they wanted to do. And in that, he got drawn in and he started worshiping many of the false gods that he had told them that they could worship. And in doing that, he lost his connection with God and he began to derail. And before you know it, that entire nation he had built came crumbling down. So Solomon is a story of extremes. A story of a man wiser than any other, a man that lived a life that covers the gamut, guys. Doesn't matter what arena you live in, Solomon has lived in your arena. From a business perspective, a husband perspective, a father perspective, a king perspective. I mean, in every arena, Solomon's done it. And what he did was he sat down through this incredible journey and he is attributed three different sets of writings. The first set of writing that is attributed to Solomon is a book called The Song of Solomon or The Song of Songs. Now, The Song of Solomon and The Song of Songs is a little controversial in terms of whether Solomon actually wrote it, one, or whether Solomon was even the main character in it. Many would say that this is a story of Solomon. There are some problems with that because the woman in this incredible set of love stories, the woman doesn't seem to fit into the story of Solomon because we think he married Pharaoh's wife first after he became king. But it's very possible that he married this woman prior to Pharaoh's wife because Pharaoh's wife was an alliance, right? So we're not totally sure, to be honest with you. We've dug in. We're not totally sure in the Song of Solomon whether we're talking about two different people that Solomon either knew or that knew Solomon, that he wrote about, whether these two people wrote in honor of Solomon a love story, or whether it is the story of Solomon unfolding in that love story. I share that with you because if you go and research the background of Song of Solomon, you'll find that there is some controversy about who exactly nailed that thing down. But we know this, based on our studies, that book, Song of Solomon, was brought together and put together during the reign of King Solomon. And there is evidence within the book that certainly demonstrates with reasonable sense that Solomon was deeply involved in the story, potentially and strongly potentially, he is the main character in the love story.
But the bottom line is this. The Song of Solomon, or the Song of Songs, is given to us, and it is the most beautiful picture of a young person falling in love, getting married, and walking into what is the most important relationship on this planet outside of coming to salvation in Christ, your marriage. So Solomon starts off by giving us this gift. When you are young and you are married and you're in your teens and 20s and 30s and marriage is doing all its thing, listen now. Here are some things to keep in mind. And it gives you a picture of what you should be expecting as well as what you should be doing within the wonder of the relationship of love and marriage. And we're going to travel through that together. And we're going to learn from Solomon. And it doesn't matter where you land in your marriage, it's going to inspire you. And then Solomon gave us a second set of writings. We know them as the Proverbs. Solomon is the author of the Proverbs all the way through to Proverbs 30. Proverbs 30 and 31 are authored by two other people, which if you research them, you will find out we have no idea who they are. I mean, I dug in, guys. There is no evidence that these people ever existed, let alone that they... But we know they wrote the Proverbs because the Proverbs tell us this is who wrote this proverb. This oracle was written by this person. Like, who is this person? I don't know. Why is he in here? I don't know. Why did Solomon choose to put him in his Proverbs? I don't know. But without those people, we wouldn't have Proverbs 31, and we wouldn't know what an excellent wife is like. We wouldn't have Proverbs 30 and know what it's like to lead and to be the person we need to be. So God had an incredible intent in that. The rest of the Proverbs were put together by Solomon. Now, interestingly enough, we find out that if you get to Proverbs 25, it says that Hezekiah, King Hezekiah, actually put Proverbs 25 through 30 together. He collected writings of Solomon, Proverbs of Solomon, and put them together. Hezekiah reigned in 715 BC, which was quite a ways later from Solomon. So the book of Proverbs was probably collected and put together not by Solomon, but by Hezekiah, who then came along and said, Solomon wrote Proverbs 1 through 24. Then there was some new stuff they found that Solomon wrote, 25 through 30. They brought those two together and they added 30 and 31 on the back end. And there you have the book of Proverbs. Most of the Proverbs are given to us by King Solomon. And you know what the Proverbs are? They are a father's writing to his children. That's what they are in a nutshell. The Proverbs, and we'll read them, we'll go through them, is a father writing to his children saying, listen, as you grow up, here are the things you need to know. So the Proverbs cover two stages of life. They cover early childhood and growing as a child, and they cover parenting. So whether you're an early child, not yet falling in love and getting married, or whether you're a parent, married and well into the game, Proverbs is going to cover both those worlds. And so you've got the marriage world in between covered by Song of Solomon. And then a third piece of writing, Solomon writes the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is a fascinating book. It is the book written by an old man who has lived life well. He's called the preacher, actually. The correct translation is not teacher as it is in NIV, although that's a fine translation. But the real translation is preacher, and it says the preacher is preaching to us. And you can see Solomon in his old age, having lived long and lived hard, having watched things crumble and crash, having learned some terrible, terrible lessons. And he writes to us the Ecclesiastes, and he says to us, I have traveled through every journey life has to offer, and I've got some things to tell you. And the preacher preaches at us. And wherever you land in life, if you want to listen in to someone that has 20/20 vision on the hindsight, this is the man. And remember, all this time, it is this very man, Solomon, that God himself said to us, this is the wisest man that ever lived. The wisest man that ever lived. And just like you and I, as human as can be, with all the wisdom he has, still crashes and burns. So what makes that so fascinating to me is that when we listen into Solomon, we don't listen into a man that has no idea how the rest of us live because his wisdom makes him magical. We have a man that with all the wisdom in the world still derailed in life massively. and got to tell us how and why he did that. I just read a book recently called How the Mighty Fall. It's a business book by a guy named Jim Collins. He also wrote a business book called Good to Great, and he wrote another book called Built to Last. Both these books were books about companies that have gone from good to great and companies that were built to last. And he wrote this book, How the Mighty Fall, about those same good to great companies and built to last companies. Several of them fell in recent days. So he wrote a book about how they fell. And you know which book I learned the most from of all three of those that I read? How the Mighty Fall. That one taught me the most of all. Because oftentimes in life, we can learn far more from the story of a fallen character than we can from a story of a mighty character that never fell. And that is exactly the story of Solomon. A man that walked into life and covered every category you might be interested in. And then crashed and burned and wrote to us and said, I've got some things you ought to know about life. So I want to read to you just a few excerpts from this man's writings. And then for the next few weeks on Sunday nights, guess what we're going to be doing? We're going to be sitting at the feet of Solomon, listening in to what he says about love and marriage, what he says about parenting and children, and what he says about life as a man that's traveled through. So if you'd like to turn with me, you're welcome to turn with me, but I'm just going to read a few excerpts from you just so you've got an idea of what we're talking about. First, we will start in the Song of Solomon. In the Song of Solomon is, I'll give you a page number in just a second here, page 470 of our Bibles, Song of Solomon, chapter 1. I would recommend you just sit back and listen, because these words are like water, or like honey to what is it? I don't know. That's it. I lost it. It was so beautiful. I was trying to be all poetic like this is going to be, but it died. Okay, so here we go. Let me get started here. Okay, Song of Solomon, chapter 1, verse 8. If you do not know, most beautiful of women, follow the tracks of the sheep and graze your young goats by the tents of the shepherds. I liken you, my darling, to a mare harnessed to one of the chariots of Pharaoh. Your cheeks are beautiful with earrings, your neck with strings of jewels. You will make your earrings of gold studded with silver. That's the kind of words we get. Look at this. Look at Song of Solomon 2, chapter 2, verse 1. I am a rose of Sharon, a lily of the valleys. That's what the woman says. Now look what the man says. Like a lily among thorns is my darling among the maidens. Boys, pay attention to this, all right? This is the kind of stuff that wins any heart, okay? I mean, imagine that. The woman says, I am like the rose of Sharon. And the first words out of your mouth is, oh, let me tell you something. Every other girl on the planet, when you compare them to you, they're like thorns and you're a lily. Oh, who wouldn't love that? And this is just getting started, okay? This gets incredible. And the poems and the love and the passion that is born out of this book is extraordinary. In fact, some of the weeks that we spend in Song of Solomon, I will be giving you guys fair warning. When you come in, I will say tonight's sermon may be edging on the PG-13, just because this book wasn't even allowed to be read by a Jewish boy or girl until they were 14. And even then, it was relatively embarrassing. So, we're going to talk, and we're going to talk about what it means to love passionately, and what it means to be in love passionately as two human beings in this wonder called marriage. Let's turn to the book of Proverbs. You can just go back a little ways. I'm just going to read for you one excerpt from the Proverbs just to give you an idea of the beauty of the Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 2. Here, Solomon is writing, and again, to his son, he says this, Proverbs 2:1, my son, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding, and if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, and if you look for it as for silver and search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom, and from his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. He holds victory in store for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk is blameless, for he guards the course of the just and protects the way of his faithful ones. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that just beautiful? Listen to this. Proverbs chapter 3, let's go down to verse 13. Listen to this. Blessed is the man who finds wisdom, the man who gains understanding, for she is more profitable than silver and yields better return than gold. She is more precious than rubies. Nothing you desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand. In her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are pleasant ways, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who embrace her. Those who lay hold of her will be blessed. These are the writings of Solomon telling us, listen now. You got one life, one shot, one chance. And I will give you the secret to living that life in a way that would lead to everything you desire, peace and wonder and all these things, long life that's in here. The secret to that is wisdom, having enough knowledge to apply to life to live God's way. And in the book of Proverbs, we will find much wisdom. And then, as an older man, past parenting now, we find the king writing these words in the book of Ecclesiastes, just a page or two forward, on page 464, beginning in verse 1 of chapter 1, the words of the teacher or preacher, son of David, king of Jerusalem. Meaningless. Meaningless, says the teacher. Everything is meaningless. Beautiful way to start a book, isn't it? Oh, we're not even close. What does a man gain from all his labor at which he toils under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? Is there, it is here already, long ago. It is here before our time. There is no remembrance of men of old, and even those who are yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow. Are you excited yet? Go, work hard, guys, tomorrow. Build a company, build an empire. 200 years from now, it'll be gone. It won't matter. People won't even remember you. It's all meaningless. Look at this. I, the teacher, verse 12, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. I devoted myself to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under heaven. What a heavy burden God has laid on men. I have seen all things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. What is twisted cannot be straightened, and what is lacking cannot be counted. I thought to myself, look, I have grown and increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I have experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. But I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. Isn't that beautiful? Now, turn with me to the end of this book, chapter 12. This old man concludes a long string of meaningless activity that he's going to talk to us about, drawing us back into realizing that if we've got this wrong on this life and we spend ourselves on all the wrong things, they will lead to nothing. And we will be left finding ourselves where he does, meaningless. But he says this, verse 9 of chapter 12, not only was the teacher wise, but also he imparted knowledge to the people. He pondered and searched out and set in order many proverbs. The teacher searched to find just the right words, and what he wrote was upright and true. The words of the wise are like goads. Their collected sayings like firmly embedded nails given by one shepherd, that one shepherd being God. Be warned, my son, of anything in addition to them. Of making many books there is no end, and much study wearies the body. Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commands. For this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. We are going to travel through the writings of Solomon over the next few weeks. I don't know how long it's going to take us. Your guess is as good as mine. Might be a few weeks, might be a few months. Hey, might even be a few years. But one way or the other, we're going to travel our way through. And when we're done, I hope you and I both are able to sit back and go, wow. As I look ahead into the unknown, I have been given knowledge and wisdom to such an extent that I think I will be able to navigate the unknown as one with wisdom, one who knows. And instead of looking back with regret someday, I will look back with great joy, having learned from men like Solomon and from the one shepherd, God himself, as he gives us these stories so that we don't have to walk through life blind. So I look forward to the journey on Sunday nights as we travel through the life of Solomon and his writings. Let's pray.